טוב, שלום עליכם. We're in שביעית, פרק א', הלכה ד', במשנה סטייטס. היה אחד עושה כיכר דבלה, או שניים עושים, אין החושים להן אלא סולקן. We began to discuss this last week, that we need three trees that produce at least a כיכר דבלה each. So if one or two of them do not do so, they're not considered... We don't consider them a tree. In other words, we don't count them as one of the three trees that we mentioned in the earlier Mishnah, if you recall. In the previous Mishnah, we learned that you need three trees. Three serious trees with a good, solid, good production level. Three trees, you need three trees in one, as Mishnah says in Mishnah Beth. כל שלושה אילנות בבית שאה, אם רואים לעשות כיכר דבלה של שישים עונה ביתרקי, חושים כל בית שאה בשבילן. Either way, he's trying to tell you that you need three that each produce כיכר דבלה. היה אחד עושה כיכר דבלה, או שניים עושים, אין חושים אלא לסולקן. Not only if one does, the other two don't, but even if two do, and one doesn't, we don't say, well, the majority do, we'll go by two out of three, that's sufficient. Ella, we say, you need three trees that produce a kikar devela each, and if not, en hoshim elahen elak sorkan, that's in Mishnah Dalet, ad shiyu shalosha, u mishlosha u ad tish'a. And this is the case up to nine trees, yes.
It just seems impossible that if you've got two that do, or just one that doesn't, impossible if you've got one that does, two that doesn't, it's like group of three.
I understand your question. I'm not sure if that necessarily means that the Mishnah can't state the halakha as it is stating it. I think sometimes you see a Mishnah, for example, that does not necessarily follow the logic of the inevitable logic of a kosher ken always.
It's
a matter of expression. It's also very brief. It's not as if many words were used here to express the idea. Right, haya ehad oseh kikar devela, or shnayim oseh, el hoshim ha'el esolkan, al shiyu shalosha, umishlosha v'ad tisha. Hayu asara umi'asara ulema'ala, if there were ten or more, in the beth se'ah, right, ben osim, ben shenan osim, hoshim kol beth se'ah b'shvilan. In that case, we say, if there are ten or more trees, you don't care any longer how much they produce. They can be very poor trees. We say that... If there are 10 trees in one field of a Beth Se'ah, you can plow the entire Beth Se'ah because of those 10 trees. In other words, it's all considered the Sorech Ha'ilanoth, it's all considered to be for the purpose of those trees, and for the purpose of trees, one is allowed to plow as we've learned. Correct?
So the first ratio is also talking about this?
Oh yes, the whole thing we're talking, as we said before, as we learned Mishnah Beth. So we're always talking here about a Beth Se'ah.
So we have three good ones or 10 of them?
Right. Now, the Mishnah says, at the end of this statement, so until now it is quite clear, if you have three trees that do so, each produce a kikar devela, then those three are sufficient to plow the entire field. If it's less than three, well, there are three, but they're not all producing on that level, they don't count, and then you can only plow around each tree. This is all Erev Shvi'it, of course. Regarding 10 or more trees, then we don't care how much they produce. So if there's any 10 trees that are alive, count. And if there's 10 in a Beth Se'ah, you can plow the whole Beth Se'ah.
So if you've got 9, you need the whole 9 to be fruit-bearing?
As long as you have 3, they produce that amount of kikar devela, minimum of 3 which produce kikar devela each. If it's 9 that happen to do that, then it's vadai kosher, right? That's clearly, okay. The end of the Mishnah adds, Shene'emar b'harish u'v'kasir tishboth. Right, this is a kind of addition, in some you could say, or a perush, to what we saw in the first Mishnah. In the first halakha, we began to learn about the isur of harisha, of plowing, v'steha ilan eresh v'eith, in the sixth year, right, which lichora is a bichal achidush, since when is it asur to do anything in the sixth year? The Torah speaks about the seventh year, Shanat HaShmitah, not Shana Shishith. So the Mishnah here in Halakha Dalet begins to explain this inyan by saying shenena baharishu lakasir tishbot. In other words, this pasuk baharishu lakasir tishbot refers to what? Refers to a pasuk in the Torah which speaks of Shabbat, where it says baharishu lakasir tishbot. Now we know from any pasukim in the Torah that one is not allowed to do harish or katsir, or for that matter any nacha on Shabbat. So why does the Torah specifically mention the harish and katsir, something as being things you may not do on Shabbat? In other words, the Shabbat that happens every 7 days. And the answer, as we will see in the next Mishnah, if you look in Mishnah, hey, look on the next Mishnah, go look forward. Most of the Yerushalmis, at least, it's halacha hey, and sorech lomar harish v'chasir shel l'shvi'eith. It would not be necessary to mention harish and katsir of shvi'eith, ela harish shel ener shvi'eith shenichas to shvi'eith, v'chasir shel shvi'eith shehu yoseh lemosa'e shvi'eith. Rather, it's coming to tell us that even though the pasuk is speaking the Chorah about Shabbat, there's no chidush involved regarding Shabbat that we don't know, that we learn from this pasuk. Nothing new here whatsoever. Nor can it be telling us something about Shvi'ith, because the Torah says specifically about Shnat HaShvi'ith, and it was the seventh year, not the seventh day, that you can't do Chalish and Katsir and all these, and all Avodah, Be'etzem. So what's the purpose of this pasuk? The drasha of the Mishnah states, Ela harish and erev shvi'ith shenichnas l'shvi'ith. We're talking here about the harish that one does in one's field in the sixth year, shenichnas l'shvi'ith, which is a preparation for the seventh year. But kasir shvi'ith shahu yaseh lemosa'e shvi'ith, and the kasir that one does in the seventh year, which is vaday asur, but you're doing it as a preparation for the next year. So this last line, these last few words in halacha dalet, and this halacha hey, are coming to explain the whole topic here of Harish be'erev shvi'ith, b'shanah shishit. Okay? Alright, so now we go back to halacha dara, and we look at the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, Hayah had ose v'chule. Right? We're talking about if the one tree produces a kikar devela, or two trees, etc., we say it's not enough, we need three trees. Rabbi Bevai, v'shem Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Bevai said as follows, and then Rabbi Hanina. Apparently, Rabbi Hanina, the famous Rabbi Hanina, the Talmid of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the beginning of Halacha Dalet, and it's in the Yerushalmi, in the Talmud, not the Mishnah. Halacha Dalet, in the Yerushalmi? Yes. Right, Rabbi Bevai, some people mistakenly say Bibi, nothing against Bibi, that's not how it should be written. The word Bevai, if you want to know how one knows this, it's very simple. There are many ways to know this. One way is to quote the Pesach Yisrael. The name, of course, appears in the Talmud Bavli often as well. It's not an unusual name. Most people mispronounce it. In Ezra, Perek Beth, Pasuk Yod Aleph, it's talking about the Jews who came back from Bavel to Eretz Israel, when Koresh allowed them to do so. So the Pasuk says explicitly, B'nei Vevai, the sons of the family of Vevai, Shesh Meot of Esrim Ushlosha, there were 623 members of that extended family who came back to Eretz Israel at that time. So here's the name. The name is in front of us in the Tanakh. It says the name is Bevai. Bevai, with the comments, Bevai. So the name is well known. This is also a fact pointed out by the Ya'betz, in one or two of his books he mentions that this is the correct pronunciation of the word, of the name and not Bibi, as some people mistakenly say. So, Rabbi Bevai, B'shem Rabbi Hanina, U'bilvad shelo yuhot meheshbon mushulashim. In other words, we require that all the trees should produce a kikar of dvela, meaning that if you have six trees, for example, Ya'asu shtei kikarot v'tish'a. In other words, apparently he's trying to say, if you have more than three trees, you still have to keep up. Even if one does, is apparently saying, if you have one or two that make do less, produce less than the others, the overall cheshbon should be, should fit the number of trees. So, if you have three trees that produce three kikar, fine. If you have six trees, you need to have six that produce the according to the same ratio overall, even though in fact one is producing less and one is producing more. The average should be, right. There are different perushim. A lot of the issues here in these particular halachot to do with calculating the crops, the produce, etc., are quite involved. There are many shitot. I don't know if it's worth really trying to get into it. So let's just go with the simple perush that he's saying. That goes by the average should be so. Zeira bar hanina hinana amar. In other words, if you have nine trees, then each one should be able to produce at least a ninth of the required amount. And if you have eight, then it goes by eight. So he's apparently disagreeing that it's not enough to go by averages. We also need, we require each tree to carry its weight, so to speak. Hayu arba'a.
If you had four trees in the field, that's a hard shikar because then you're getting a very sudden jump between the nine, where each one has right. to have that, and the tenth where you don't have to worry about anything.
That's true. But you have to have a cutoff point at somewhere, and no, at which point you say you have many trees, then we just say, and there's so many trees in this field now, relatively speaking, that it's reasonable to claim that anyway your plan is for the purpose of the trees. Whereas if it's just a few trees, then you may higher demands of those three trees, shall we say, before saying that you can do the whole field because of these three trees. And remember also we said that the halakha is that the three trees can be anywhere, on the side, on the edge, etc., of the field. So we don't, even though we're very mekel regarding a minimum, you don't need more than three trees. We're not mekel to the point where we say three trees that really don't do anything. At least it has to be three trees that produce something serious. Now, Zeira continues, and he says, the previous Amura, in other words, continues, and he says, Hayu arba'a wa habakar over b'chaylau, shenayim wa ena bakar over b'chaylau, mikewan shena bakar over b'chaylau, ata ro'e othan ki'ilu hamisha. In other words, as we discussed previously, every tree requires a certain amount of space in order to grow properly. In other words, it needs its roots to spread out over a certain area, etc. Now, when there's too many trees crowding each other, it obviously affects the produce, the crop, the yield of each tree. That's also why it's not wise to put too many trees in a certain area, and that requires in order to know how many trees you can have in one certain area, a particular area, that requires experience, basically. Now, if you have four trees, and the plow can move between them, in other words, the ox and the plow, habakar, bechelal. Bechelal means the plow and its machinery. It's not much of machinery, but, you know, the whole thing that it drags along behind it, that's called habakar, bechelal. If the bakar and the plow can make their way comfortably between one tree and the next, that means there's enough room for each tree to manage, which is about arba amoth. In other words, there has to be at least arba amoth, which is about 2 meters or a bit less, between each tree, at minimum, for each tree to develop properly. And if that's the case, then those four trees are considered four trees. But it doesn't matter right now. We said that we generally use the tanim as a yardstick, but this is true for any trees of any kind. That each tree needs a minimum of arba amoth, which is the space required for the bakar, for the ox and the plow to get by, okay, between each tree. Now, if however you have two trees that are very close together, shnayim, that's what it says, shnayim wa ena bakar over b'chela, if you have two trees and they're so close together that the ox and the plow cannot pass between the two, then this as we said, this would affect the yield of the trees. Of those, both those trees would probably therefore yield less. And that's the case in terms of our calculation here of how many trees you have in the field and how much they're producing. If two trees are so close together that the plow and the ox cannot move between them, then they count as one tree. We don't count them as five. Then you, even though they're four, you count them as five. מכיוון שאין הבקר עובר בחלב, אתה רואה אותן כאילו הן חמישה. לא רוצה לסייר, אתה רואה אותן כאילו הן חמישה. These two trees are considered as one. They're considered as one, and therefore it's sufficient that each one produces a fifth of the required amount. You have
got four, but of them, two of them are very close. So it's like you've got three trees.
But in fact you have four trees, correct? In fact, there are four trees. So what we're saying is the required amount can be spread out as if there are five trees. In other words, they each have to produce less, one-fifth of the required of the total amount,
because they're close together, and therefore
the yield is going to be limited, and therefore it's not reasonable to expect the same yield from those trees as you would from the trees that are further spaced are further apart.
It's definitely a kulam, because
it is a kulam. The whole we see time and again that Yerushalmi is very mekel on everything to do with these halachot of erev shvi'ith, which is not min haTorah. We see that Yerushalmi is mekel throughout to make it fairly straightforward for the farmer to be able to plow his field erev shvi'ith. In other words, they apparently saw this was a fairly big chumrah that had been instituted earlier on. Maybe they also saw for different reasons that it's very difficult for many reasons. So whatever possible, they'll make it. Alright, it says, Hayu hamisha. In other words, if we have five trees in a beth se'ah, we're always talking about a beth se'ah, otherwise what does five trees mean? In what area? We're talking about a specific area of a beth se'ah. You have five trees. Now, the issue here is that of these five trees, four are spaced in such a way that there is less than the required amount even for the ox and the plow to get by between the two. All right? There's less than four amoth between between one tree and the next. And this is true for four of them out of the five. In such a case as this, Tafluchta, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbanim. Tafluchta is like the word pluchta in the Talmud Bavli. In other words, this is a machloket between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanim. Rabbanim is the same as Chachamim. What is a machloket? The Tanina, we learned in the Mishnah, in Kilayim. Keren, Shehu, Natua, Al Pahoth, Me'arba Amoth. In other words, we're talking about vines that are planted in two rows, shall we say, but it's less than four amoth between the two rows. Normally you would have four amoth between two rows because that's as practical in order to allow people to move between the rows and pick the fruit, pick the grapes, etc., without ruining the vines. But if a kerem was planted, shahuna tua al pahoth me arba amoth, rabbi shimon omer eno kerem, then it's not considered a kerem. Chamim omrim kerem. What is being said here? So the Mishnah in Masechet Kilayim is not discussing Shvi'ith, obviously discussing Kilayim. Kilaya Kerem. Kilaya Kerem means planting wheat, shall we say, in a vineyard. Right? It's a summon of Torah to plant wheat seeds in a field, in a Kerem, which is planted with grapes, with grapevines. And the question is, what's a kerem? If I have, for instance, a field, for argument's sake, a beth se'ah, in the middle of the field I have one vine. You know, I'm not going to say that I can't plant wheat all over the field or different parts of the field because of this one grapevine in the middle of the field, are we? Even though it could be 50 meters away. It doesn't make any sense. It's also not called a kerem. A kerem, by definition, is not one vine. Kerem is several vines. So the question is, what's the minimal definition of a kerem when it comes to kilaya kerem? So we're talking here about a mata, in other words, a field where there are at least two rows of grapes, of grapevines. In the one you have one row, you have two grapevines, and in the next row you have three grapevines. That's altogether five, correct? If that's the case, that's considered a keren. If it's less than that, a heret, if that's not the case, then it's considered like one gefen. So you have three, for instance, you have three gefanim, three grapevines planted together in a circle or in a row, it doesn't really matter. That's not called a keren. That's just three individual grapevines. And that doesn't oser now the whole area around it and between them, shall we say, okay? But only if it has the term of keren can be applied, does the isur of kilea keren apply. And this depends, there is one condition for this to be the case, that these gefanim in question, shall we say three gefanim that we have, are at least four amoth separate from, four amoth separates one from the other. Then we say that three is not a keren. Now if you have a third row, you have two rows, which are further apart, there's also a third row in the middle, which is sort of joins the two rows together, even though these two are quite distant, but this one in the middle is the one that causes them to be considered one keren, one thing. Then Rabbi Shimon says, "Eno keren, shara en ben ashurot merhak adarush." There's still not the necessary distance between the two rows. And Chachamim omrim keren, it is considered a keren because these two rows, the two outer rows, are still sufficiently. There's four amoth between them, so that's sufficient. We don't care about the middle row. Rabbi Shimon says, if there's a middle row, that's mevatel the fact now that there's four amoth between the two outside rows. So if you have five gefanim in such a field, as we just described, then halacha would be hoshin kol betzeah bishvilan. So the Talmud is giving you the shita or the halacha here according to the Chachamim in such a case. That we see the gefanim in the middle as if they're not there, and therefore we say there is sufficient room between, there's a sufficient distance between the two outer rows in order not to be considered a keren, and then you can plow the entire field because of this fact. You have a tziur here, as you can see here, if you have. You have a row here and a row here and one in the middle. This row, the question is this row in the middle count in order to nullify the distance between these two or not? The Chachamim say does not do so, and therefore you could plow the entire field because of this distance between those two rows. Okay?
You mean the Chachamim say it is a keren, Ireland.
In the case of Kilaya Kerem, the question is what constitutes a Kerem. We're using the same principle in order to decide whether you can plow the entire field Erev Shvi'it. In the case of Kilaya Kerem, the Cheshbon is as follows. If you have four amoth between the two rows, it's not considered a keren until you have more than that. But if you have the question is as a middle row, even though there's a few gefanim there, it's not a row as big as long, a lot as more spaced out, shall we say? Does that mevatel the fact that the distance between the two outer rows is too great to be considered a keren, or does it not mevatel this fact? So the Chachamim say we ignore the middle row, and in Yan Kilaya Kerem, you could plant wheat in some of those areas. Regarding our issue of planting Erev Shvi'it, we're using the same logic as Kilaya Kerem here in our case. If you have five trees and they're spaced out in such a way, then we ignore, we see two rows, one here, and the middle row here. If it's a smaller row, and they don't produce very much, we ignore that middle row, and we say we only go by the outer rows. Again, it's a kula, which results in the fact that Hoshim kol betzeah b'shvilan, that all that area can be plowed Erev Shvi'it. Okay, you have the right place. We're in Perek Aleph, Halacha, the end of Halacha Dalet. Alright, so the Yerushalmi continues, and it says, Shne'ema b'harish u'b'kaseir tishboth. You got that? The end of Halacha Dalet? Towards
halacha
dalet. Towards the end. It says, "Shenema b'harishu l'kasir tishboth." Okay, this was what this is now coming to explain the last line of our Mishnah in the Mishnah in Halacha Daled. The last line said, all of a sudden made a statement, "Shenema b'harishu l'kasir tishboth." Right, and we explained that this is coming to explain the basis of this whole topic of Isul Harisha b'Erev Shvi'ith. With me? Right? You know, I repeat, in Halacha Daled, in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah of Halacha Daled, right, the end of the Mishnah says, Shene'emar, b'harishu l'kasir tishboth. What's this referring to? Okay, now, okay. It's in these editions, it's in Halacha Gimel. It's in Halacha number 3.
Okay.
And the Mishnah here, several Mishnayot here have been strung together. In my version, which is based on the Kavyad, these are all separate Mishnayot. That's why you see here, it says here, you see, this is his Halacha Gimel, but here it says Mishnah Dalet, Mem Dalet.
Yeah, right.
It says Mishnah Dalet, and here it goes on. There it goes on to say here, somewhere Mishnah Hey, I believe. Does it say that? Anyway, it's just telling you it's a separate Mishnah. What we were discussing is what the Mishnah states here. It says here, all of a sudden it says, Shenema b'harishu v'kasir tishboth. Why in the middle of this discussion of numbers of trees does it mention this pasuk? And then, and this is discussed in the Talmud over here.
Sorry.
No problem. We'll stop here for Arvit, and then we'll continue with that where we are now. Don't lose the place immediately afterwards.